samadhuka sukham dhiram samritta tvaya kalpate yam hinavya tayantiyate purusham purusharshubha samadhuka sukham dhiram samritta tvaya kalpate. Translation of Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. All best among men, Arjun, the person who is not disturbed by happiness and distress and is steady in both is certainly eligible for liberation. Purport. Anyone who is steady in his determination for the advanced stage of a spiritual realization and can equally tolerate the onslaughts of distress and happiness is certainly a person eligible for liberation. In the Varnashram institution, the fourth stage of life, namely the renounced order, sannyas, is a painstaking situation. But one who is serious about making his life perfect surely adopts the sannyas order of life in spite of all difficulties. The difficulties usually arise from having to sever family relationships, to give up the connection of wife and children. But if anyone is able to tolerate such difficulties, surely his path to spiritual realization is complete. Similarly, in Arjuna's discharge of duties as a kshatriya, he is advised to persevere, even if it is difficult to fight with family members or similarly beloved persons. Lord Chaitanya took sannyas at the age of 24, and his dependents, a young wife as well as old mother, had no one else to look after them. Yet, for the higher cause, he took sannyas and was steady in the discharge of higher duties. That is the way of achieving liberation from material bondage. Om Ajnata Mirandasya Gnanjana Shlokaya Shakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayana Viraya Astaprayeshu Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Tamashloke Bhaktir Bhakti Namastakina. So, in this verse, there are two things being addressed. The main issue of this verse that Krishna is speaking here is the necessity for liberation. We want to relate this sloka to a story from the Srimad Bhagavatam. We recently completed reading the first chapter of the ninth canto of the Bhagavad Purana just a few weeks ago. We completed that in the mornings. And that's the story of King Sudyumna. It so happened a long, long time ago when the earth was populated, was being populated, there are many Manus in different ages. According to Vedic cosmological calculation, there are many Manus that come to populate the earth. In this case, it was Vaivashata Manu, who had a son, who was planning to have a son. And his name was Sradhadev. His wife's name was Sradha. And it so happened that in those days, people used to do what is called Garbhadhana Samskara. In order to procreate good children, good progeny, there was a sacrifice performed. So the family guru of this king, Sradhadev, performed the sacrifice. But there was one incident that changed the whole story. It's that the wife, his wife, the queen, Sradha, she actually wanted a daughter. But the whole idea of doing this yagya or this sacrifice is to get a son. But anyway, so Sradha, the queen, approached one of the minor priests during the ceremony, and she begged and begged and begged for the daughter. So under the impression that everything was all right, that the sacrifice was being conducted properly, Shraddhadev Mano, he was expecting a son, but suddenly a girl showed up. A girl was born. And so he could not understand how that had happened, because he understood the potency of Vasishtha Muni, who was the main priest. And so he went and asked, you know, what happened here? We did everything by the book. We chanted the proper mantras, the right meter, the right intonation. Everything was perfect, the ingredients. But how come a girl was born? So Vasishtha, with his intuition of a Muni, he understood what had going to happen, and then he decided to pray to Lord Vishnu to change the girl into a boy. And so Vasishtha Muni, by the power of his austerity, he did that, and he satisfied Lord Vishnu, and Lord Vishnu actually conceded his wish and said, okay, this girl will be a boy, and his name will be Sudyumna. Prince Sudyumna. And so everything was fine. The boy grew up and he became an educated young man, prince. And eventually he took the reins of the kingdom. However, it so happens that one time when he was with his friends and other kshatriyas, you know, touring his kingdom, and they went hunting. You know, kshatriyas do this thing, they hunt to practice their military arts or whatever. So they happened to come to a very interesting forest, and they wanted to take shelter of this forest. And so the king with his advisors, counselors, and the other party, you know, the hunting party, they went into this forest. And as soon as they entered into this forest, they all turned into women. And so they all look at each other. Oops. What happened here? Nobody could understand. And all animals, actually, all the male animals also turned into female animals. And so nobody could understand what had happened. And just looking at each other in shock, I guess. And so the Bhagavatam explains that this particular forest is a private place of Lord Shiva. Was, but still is, a private setting for Lord Shiva and his wife. And it so happened that in previous ages, because of that privacy, Lord Shiva's wife asked Lord Shiva to, well, one time actually there was an incident, there was a bunch of munis and sages coming to see Lord Shiva. And, he usually attracts this kind of crowd. So anyway, they wanted to go take a darshan of Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva's wife was naked, and so she was surprised to see this man entering the ashram. And so Lord Shiva promised her that the next time any male entering this forest, and specifically the ashram, they would turn into females. And so that's the reason why King Sudyumna turned into a woman along with his entourage. So anyway, when that happened, the kingdom was left without a king. And so there was a disturbance, and Vasishtha Muni, again understanding the gravity of the emergency situation, he approached Lord Shiva this time. And he asked him, you know, we can't do this. I mean, we need a king. And he was crowned king. So Lord Shiva, in order to satisfy the wishes of the Muni, but at the same time satisfy the wishes of his wife, he said, okay, Sudyumna can be a man for 1 month and a woman for another month to the rest of his life. And so eventually King Sudyumna, he grew old, and his own sons became capable of running the kingdom, so he took off, went to the forest, to a different forest, so retired. So this story is kind of very interesting, because it actually conveys the same meaning of this verse of the Bhagavad Gita. As we understand, the Bhagavad Gita is one of the most important Upanishads in the Vedic theological literature. And the Bhagavad Purana, or the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's also a main part of the Vedic literature. And these two scriptures, Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, they complement each other. So the teachings found in the Bhagavad Gita, you can see them applied in the stories of the Bhagavatam. And in this particular case, what comes into perspective here is that the soul, the transcendental living entity, we, the eternal souls, we actually do not have a identification with the body. We are not males, we are not females, we are not old, we are not young, we are not Indians, we are not Americans. All these designations that are related to the material body are completely irrelevant when it comes to understanding the soul or understanding the self. And the story of this story of the Bhagavata, what it does is it puts into perspective our own stories, each of our own stories, because it is not that we are in these bodies presently at this time. Some of us are males, other ones are females, and we think that, you know, this has been since time immemorial, we have been males or we've been females. No, according to the Bhagavata philosophy and the Upanishads philosophy, that's not the case. And this is illustrated in this story. And what happened is that this story, what it does is it concentrates into one single lifetime what we go through many lifetimes. You see, like this king, Sudumna, he was a male for 1 month, a female for another month, then a male again and a female again. So this conveys the understanding that the soul goes through changes, bodily changes. So in this present lifetime, some of us are males, some of us are females. Next lifetime, who knows? The changing of the bodies, again, has nothing to do with the soul. And the next point in the story is that the king, Sudumna, after having gone through this change of bodies every single month, you know, I mean, just imagine, I mean, every 4 weeks, you have to change your mentality, change your psychology, change your physical appearance, and, you know, you turn into a man, and then the next 4 weeks, by the time the next 4 weeks come around, again, a psychological change, a physiological change, a biological change, turn into a man, you know what I mean? So it puts into perspective what really goes on in the material world. And so, but the next main point of the story is that the king actually realized that, you know, this changing body business is over. I'm taking off. And so, this is what Krishna speaks in this particular verse. He says, Krishna says, Somrittatvaya kalpate. Amrittatvaya is a synonym for mukti, or moksha in Sanskrit, which means liberation. So liberation from what? I mean, sometimes we think we are living, we have a great life, we have great education, we have a great job or a great business, we live in a great country, you know, nobody's bothering us that much, everything is fine, so why should I be liberated from this? Just like in America right now, we're all celebrating the 4th of July, isn't it? Everybody's celebrating freedom, political freedoms. At one point in time, this country was under the rule of England, and people felt themselves enslaved oppressed, and they said, you know, we want liberation, we want freedom. So the tendency of the soul to seek freedom in many levels of experience, or in many levels of social activity, or even personal activity, personal life, the soul is always hankering for freedom. But freedom does not exist in the material world, as illustrated by the story of the Bhagavatam. So therefore, the Upanishads and the Puranas in the Vedic literature, they always pinpoint to liberation. That does not mean that these Vedic literatures, they disregard our duties, our conventional duties that we presently have. Some of us are husbands, some others are wives, so we have certain duties, certain social duties, certain even religious duties. That's not neglected, but at the same time, these scriptures are pinpointing to the fact that eventually we should face the ultimate purpose of human life, and that is moksha, liberation. The Krishna Consciousness Movement was founded with this specific purpose, is to offer people the opportunity to understand what liberation is, to understand what the purpose of human life is, and to understand the methodology by which we can achieve liberation. First of all, first and foremost, liberation means freedom from sinful activities. Because some of us may think that, you know, part of being free is I want to do whatever I want. I have the freedom to do whatever I want. But that's not necessarily true. Because there is always certain rules, certain conventions, certain laws that we have to abide by. And we, by breaking those rules, conventions, or laws, we would be putting ourselves in jeopardy and putting others in jeopardy. So freedom comes within a certain framework. So similarly, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the founder of the Krishna Consciousness Movement 500 years ago, he said that of all the four purposes of human life, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, there is a fifth one on top of these four, and that is the Krishna Prema Bhakti, the attainment, the reaching to the platform in which we can actually understand who Krishna is. Because also the Vedas, even though they pinpoint towards moksha, towards liberation, it is very difficult to find in the Vedas that the actual pinnacle of liberation is service to Krishna, devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now Krishna is saying in this particular verse that there are two conditions by which one can be eligible for liberation. It doesn't mean that you are liberated, but the qualifications for a person who's interested in being liberated are twofold. First, the first one is that one should not be disturbed by happiness and distress. And the second one is that one should be steady in under all circumstances. So if we put this into perspective back into the story of the Bhagavatam, we see that King Sudyumna, he realized at the end of his life the futility of trying to be moody in this material world. Because there is never a permanent situation in this material world. We will never be always happy, and we will never be always unhappy. There is always a combination of both of the things. Sometimes we'll be under the grip of misery and grief, lamentation, and at other times we'll be under the grip of some sense of happiness. And so the material world simply means switching from happiness situation, to happy situations, to unhappy situations, and back and forth, back and forth. Just like the king was doing, back and forth, male, female, female, male, male, female. So Krishna says, the first thing you got to understand, if you want to be eligible for liberation, is that these two things will always be there. There will always be happy moments, and there will always be unhappy moments. And like, in the, to put it in the context of Arjun's case, he was about to embark on a major slaughter of soldiers. That's not an event to celebrate. When you're about to go to war, nobody celebrates that, right? So there's tension, there is certain kind of anxiety about it. And Arjun was under the circumstances. So Krishna told him, you can't avoid it. First of all, you're a kshatriya, your duty, your job is to conduct this war. And so for Arjun, he would have been perfectly happy. In fact, he told Krishna, you know, I'll be perfectly okay. I can go begging on the streets. I don't mind. I can survive. I'm not willing to fight for the whole universe, let alone this earth with these people who are all my relatives. I don't want to fight for this. I'd rather go begging. So Arjun thought that's the happy situation. But then Krishna told him, you know, regardless of what you do, happiness and unhappiness will always come. And we all here, we all have, at one point in our lives, we all have tested or tasted unhappy situations and happy situations. So the process of Krishna consciousness is meant to actually make us realize that the material existence is never permanent. It's always nothing here remains forever. Even if you manage to get the perfect profession, the perfect business, the perfect job, the perfect spouse, the perfect family, the perfect everything, sooner or later, that so-called perfection is going to go away, because that's the nature of this world. Or even if you think that you are in a unpalatable situation, always been there, never to change. Just like I was talking with some friends about this catastrophe that happened in Haiti just a few months ago. We all know that Haiti was struck by a major earthquake, with thousands of people dead, thousands left homeless, children without parents. You're talking thousands in one stroke, in a few minutes, in 10 minutes, Mother Nature just shakes a little bit and it changes the life of thousands of people, millions of people. And so these fellows, they were asking, you know, why would this happen? Why does this have to happen? Why is God allowing this? They always say that. Why is God allowing this? The point is that the material world, according to the Vedic understanding, the material world is a place for reformation. And in this sense, it's like a prison house. The true purpose of a prison house is not really to keep prisoners inside. The true purpose, really, is to reform the character of the prisoners, to educate them, to train them, so that they can go back into the freedom of civil life. The purpose is not just to keep people there. Similarly, the material world is meant for reformation. And this reformation of character is what is called self-realization. And that's what Krishna, in the opening chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, the first and the second chapter, Krishna is setting the stage for the discussion of why we need to see the important function of the material world. The material world is not meant for sense gratification. It's not. That's not the purpose. If we think that our freedoms, our political freedoms, our social freedoms, or you know, our rights, are really dovetailed to sense gratification, that's a major misunderstanding. That's not the case. So, just like we are always seeking some kind of freedom in so many other levels, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Vedas, they pinpoint to the need for us to realize that there is a freedom from material existence. And that's the whole purpose of the Krishna Conscious Movement. This Krishna Conscious Movement was established to give us the chance, the opportunity, all over the world. All over the world, with no exceptions. It doesn't matter the caste, your creed, your social standing, whether you're a man or a woman, or American, or Russian, communist, whatever. Whatever the designation of the material body may be, that designation is irrelevant when it comes to practice Krishna consciousness. And so, the message that Prabhupada is giving us also in his purport here is that self-realization sometimes is very hard to conduct. He probably gives the example of sannyas, ashram, and he also gives the example of Arjuna. But sometimes it's very hard. But for a higher purpose, we should embrace the Krishna Conscious Movement, the teachings of the Krishna Conscious Movement, and take advantage of it. Prabhupada established this society. He trained so many of his disciples. He trained so many of his followers so that we can carry on this thing, this mission. And so we encourage everyone to somehow or other participate in this great, this is a great mission. There is nothing in the material world that you can compare to this. Even if you become the greatest philanthropist in this world. Philanthropists and altruists, usually, they become very concerned about the material body, just like many celebrities, many American celebrities. They became organized right away during this Haiti earthquake. They go there with water, you know, with food, with clothing, and stuff like that. But they completely forget that these people actually, what they're seeking is freedom from material existence. Prabhupada compares this to, he gives a very great, a very good analogy. Prabhupada is saying, if you're in a boat, and you're in the ocean, cruising through the ocean, and one of your fellow passengers falls into the water, Prabhupada said, you're not interested in saving his dress. Your interest is in saving the man or the woman who fell on the water, not the dress. So similarly, these material bodies, even though they have a relative importance in, from the perspective of the absolute truth, from the perspective of the true status of the spirit soul, these material bodies are not so important. The only functions of the human body actually is seeking self-realization. There's nothing else to do with these bodies. These human bodies, this human form of life, is not meant for anything else but self-realization. Anything else we do with these material bodies is a misuse. It's just like driving an airplane through the highways. You know, airplanes are not meant to drive on the highways. Nor are cars meant to be driven in airports. There's certain machines for certain purposes. Similarly, material bodies have certain purpose, and the human form of life is given to us by nature so that we can take advantage of self-realization. There's nothing else to do with these bodies. These bodies are not meant to prolong our material existence. They're not meant to live like cats and dogs, like Prabhupada said. Because let's think about it. I mean, we can be very sophisticated in so many ways, enjoying this material body. But that's exactly what everywhere else is doing. including the animals. They are just enjoying material bodies. So the true purpose of the human form of life is self-realization, because for the one single element that the material body has is that we can exercise our free will. We can actually become true free living beings. In fact, there is a Sanskrit name for people who are free. They are called Nityasiddhas. That in Sanskrit means eternally liberated. Now, we are Nityabadhas, eternally conditioned, eternally prisoners. But we can become Nityasiddhas by the process of self-realization. And the Krishna Consciousness Movement is giving us the chance to do that. We have great resource. These temples, these institutions, this is a great resource for people to take advantage of self-realization. This is unparalleled in the history of human society. There's nothing else here in the Western world. There's nothing as valuable as the Krishna Consciousness Movement. And the moment we participate into it, by taking advantage of it, by embracing the principles of Krishna consciousness, and by participation, by plugging into the mission of Srila Prabhupada, the more we're going to be liberated. The more we're going to feel the freedom of Krishna consciousness. So we urge everyone to take advantage of this process. We have great deities, beautiful deities. Krishna has decided to appear. It's great opportunities to serve, great opportunities to associate with the devotees, great opportunities to make advancement in Krishna consciousness, like that. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? Yes, Prabhu. Yes.
And you know, you say that the girl Mother Nature shakes a little bit and it changes within a minute, dies of millions of people, and that some people, you know, artists have been uniting, give them food and water and things like that. But it's not, we don't really relevance. And you're right, we understand that. And yet it's not an either or.
Yes.
Because if these people would hear you talk right now, they'd say, I don't want to hear anything about
spiritual. I understand. Yeah. Right.
And so,
I understand.
You know, yeah.
Yeah. We actually, one of the main programs of this Krishna Conscious Movement is to actually feed people. Feeding them. Just like we're about to do here. All over the world, one of Prabhupada's ingenious ways of injecting Krishna consciousness into the people's hearts is actually to give them prasadam. And you, me, and everyone else who is contributing to this sublime purpose are actually doing a lot more benefit than all these movie stars and great celebrities just feeding the people. Thank you for the balance, though. Any other comments? Yes, Prabhu? I'm sorry, repeat that again. Oh, yeah, well, that's what they are doing.
No, no, but they should also consequently understand that by so-called helping them, hot dogs, they themselves will harm also the people who are eating, all of them will suffer.
Yeah.
So this is not real.
Yes, that's a good point. Yeah, so in the material world, we think that sometimes we become philanthropists by distributing food, distributing meat. Yeah, you're right. I mean, in Haiti, there's people distributing hot dogs and meat-based food stuff. That in the minds of a regular person who is not trained in the spiritual values, they think, oh, this is great. This guy is using all his money to feed these miserable people that are right now going through a major disaster. But Prangovinda Prabhu made the point. Not only I, the altruist, philanthropist, buying this meat, making a major sinful activity, but also by giving it to these people, I engaging them in sinful activities. So therefore, Prabhupada's mission of distributing Krishna prasadam is the right decision. Prabhupada said, we got to distribute prasadam, food offered to Krishna. Everything we do in the Krishna conscious movement is related to Krishna. Nothing is independent from Krishna that we do here. We talk about Krishna, we think of Krishna, we worship Krishna, we chant for Krishna, we cook for Krishna, and after that we eat for Krishna. We live and die for Krishna. That is called Krishna consciousness. There's nothing that we do that is not related to Krishna. And the more we do this, and granted, it's not that we, the first time that we hear about Krishna, we immediately become, you know, fully engaged, full-fledged, pure devotees of Krishna. But we should make an endeavor, day after day. How am I advancing in Krishna consciousness? What am I doing to actually become free, truly free from material existence? What am I doing? This is a very introspective way of life. Krishna consciousness requires great amount of introspection. A person who is not introspective cannot be a devotee of Krishna, because this is not a mechanical thing that we're doing. This requires great introspection, great self-examination. What am I doing? What, at the end of the day, we should do this exercise. What have I understood today of Krishna that I did not know yesterday? And in this way, day by day, little by little, we become more and more absorbed in Krishna Katha, in remembering Krishna, and in Krishna consciousness. Yes, Prabhu? Well, liberation itself is the real... Moksha in general, as understood philosophically in the Vedas, and as propagated by non-devotees, moksha simply means absent from material activity. There's a negation to material activity, but that's it. There's nothing beyond that. Those are the Mayavadis. This is why Prabhupada, by establishing the Krishna conscious movement, engagement in Krishna's service, he's going not only to the point of negating our material activities by engaging in spiritual activities. So real moksha, real liberation, real freedom really means to be engaged in the service of the Lord. That's what it is. And that is... And Prabhupada again gives a great analogy of a fish in the water. When the fish is in the water, the fish is happy. But as soon as you take the fish out of the water, you know, it's like an agony. The fish is meant to live in the water. That's the nature of, that's the natural environment. Our natural environment as a spirit souls is actually devotional service. That's like fish in the water. When we are out of devotional service, then we start feeling these pangs of material existence. Then we start oscillating between happiness and distress, male and female, female, male, man and woman, like that, life after life after life. And it doesn't stop. So liberation really means engagement in Krishna service. Whether we have material bodies or spiritual bodies, it doesn't matter. Everything is meant for Krishna service, and that's real liberation. Whatever little thing we do for Krishna, that's liberation. Yes, Prangavin. Last one here.
Yes.
Yes.
Or